If you drive out to Mangakahia Valley between Whangarei and Kaikohe, what you see first is the beautiful countryside, the ngahere and the paddocks. What may not be immediately apparent is that this is also an area of high unemployment. Housing affordability and quality are both major issues, and education opportunities for our young people are severely limited. All in all, life can be pretty challenging. We met with one whānau who believed the solutions are to be found right here at home, and they have a transformative vision to create well-being for their whānau through their whenua.
If you have a set vision that you know all the whānau will buy into, then you can add to how that's actually going to happen afterwards. But it's like that whole dream. What's my dream? What is our collective dream? And the other essential thing is thinking outside yourself, which is hard in this day and age because that's not how we've rolled. You know, it's like, well, where's my house and here's mine and I can do mine. But it's like, how do we do that as a collective? We can do mine, but how can we do so that everybody's got it sorted?
What are you going to contribute is more about how are you going to offer everybody?
Not about coin.
And that's always a good question, I find. You know, thinking, well, what am I going to contribute, not what can I get?
And the whole idea of guardianship, not ownership. Because, you know, we've been in that colonial sort of construct for so long where it's all about what I can own and what I can keep and have for my own afterwards. But actually going into that whole mind shift about guardianship rather than ownership, that's the shift.
You go do yours, I'm just going to plod along.
Oh, you know, if we can just get rid of that for Carlo and just come together and, hey man, let's just get the one started.
Not a race.
But, and that's that whole idea of collective, you know, that communal style of living here too. Because, you know, we're going back to the ways of our tupuna, where we actually used to grow kai together. Share out our kai together, you know, and then do mahi together. You know, it wasn't unusual to have 20 to 40 of you sitting at one table having a feed one time, you know, because that's how our whānau operated back then. We have to go back to those systems that our tūpuna used and make that part of our normal life.
Aroha Shelford, along with her husband Richard Morell, no kahungunu, is the key driver behind this inspiring and innovative project. Under the umbrella of Ngā Uri o Te Orere Pō Whānau Trust, Aroha and her whānau are developing sustainable papakāinga. The first stage will see 10 new earth homes built on ancestral land in Mangakahia Valley. Tēnā koutou katoa. No Maya Haere Mai ki te Indigenous Urbanism, Aotearoa Edition, Episode 1. Ko pareha ki te maunga, ko hātia te awa, ko ngā tuki matawhārua te waka, ko ngā puhi rātou ko te arawa ko whakatohia o ku iwi, ko ngāti hau me te parafau ngā hapū, ko pihi awari te marae, ko Jade Kake taku ingoa. I'm your host Jade Kake, and this is Indigenous Urbanism, stories about the spaces we inhabit, and the community driving the practitioners who are shaping those environments and decolonizing through design. Over the next few months, we'll be visiting cities, towns and villages across Aotearoa, from Te Atai Tukiro to Tamaki Makaurau, to Kirikiri Roa, to Hera Taunga, and finally, to Ōtautahi. We'll meet whānau who are developing papakāinga on ancestral land around the motu and defining what home means for them, and it might not be what you'd expect. We'll see how iwi are shaping up major projects in our largest city, Tamaki Makaurau, and revealing a very different urban environment in post-earthquake Ōtautahi. We'll also speak to some of the architects, designers, and planners who are helping to turn this vision into a reality. On this episode of Indigenous Urbanism, we travel to Mangakahia Valley in Te Atai Tukiro to visit the site of the Ngā Uri o Te Orere Pō Whānau Trust papakāinga.
This was just a paddock. And they came in and they did the sections, the house sites, each of the different house sites. They put in the road, they put in the drainage, they put in the sewage, and they put in the water tanks. So that's our infrastructure. Yeah, so we've got whānau line houses and we were doing the three. So we were going to do this one, that one, and that one, four bedrooms. And then there's another two we were just going to rent out for, but whānau lines. we're going to have like a homestead.
Yeah.
And because we built ours first, because I'm doing all the work, we were like, oh, well, I want this one. But I didn't know it would end up like this, but, you know, it was like, I want this site.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we're living here, so we want to move out of the caravan and be back in here. Because our kids have got our house in town. So when you come back, this one should be hopefully finished.
Yeah.
Windows are going in on... Yeah.
Hey! Oh,
right, the animal should be nearly...
When did we come? 2 months ago. Mm. So the progress in 2 months since I was last here, the roof is up, the floor is in, all the stuff on the outside's happening, all that has been just in the floor.
The rendering should be done by the end of next week. We were hoping to be doing it now so that people could see it and have a turn. So that'll be done by the end of next week, the rendering inside and out. Once that rendering's in, then we'll put the roof up, lay the last part of the floor, the plumbing and the electricals will all go in at the same time, because they're in like a day or day and a half. And then it'll be fit out. But it will look pretty cool, this one.
Every few months, Aroha and her whānau hold papakāinga wānanga to share what they've learnt through their papakāinga journey with other whānau who are hoping to do their own papakāinga projects. The wānanga include on-site demonstrations and presentations and workshop sessions at the marae. We sat down to have a kōrero with Aroha during a wānanga at her marae, Parakau, located just up the road from the papakāinga. It belongs to the hapu Ngāti Tereno of the Ngāpuhi Iwi. Parakau marae also shares genealogical links with Ngāti Horahia, Ngāti Moe, Ngāti Tuki and Te Parawhau hapu.
So just to start off, ko wai koe, no hea koe?
No konei no mangakahia, Parakau, ko te aroha te marae, manga kohatu te maunga, ko Aroha Shelf for a hau.
Kia ora. So we went out to your papakāinga development today, and that was my second time out there, and oh my goodness, a lot has happened since last time.
Yeah, slowly but getting there.
So could you tell me a bit about that whenua and what kind of, how did that project all kick off? How did it start?
Wow. It started from us wanting to come back to the whenua. And so we went to the whānau to ask them about living there and doing the permaculture stuff. So we got the permaculture landscapist Daniel Tohill to come up and do our plan. And he did that, and he did an awesome job. And, you know, we showed you today about what all the different plants, how to plant them, the spacing, what... you know, rongoa, all of that. So he developed all of that for us, so we got that on and put down on paper. So we took that to the whānau, said this is what we want to do. They were all in agreement at that. And then the housing opportunities came up. Like I keep using those things, was like, don't chuck houses at people. It doesn't help fix anything. So we were doing more papakāinga and a development in a holistic world view. So it was about what are people going to eat? And how are they going to be healthy, and how are we going to live in each other's lives and tackle some of the social issues, our education and training and economic development. So it's all tied in together, and that's what we see as a papakāinga. But see, that even that disconnect, eh, because not a lot of people are not brought up on their whenua anymore. So it's trying to re-establish those roots as well. Get some identity, feel confident about who you are. So that's what I see. I want to change how our social issues are looking. Why are we so high in the stats for all of those, for violence and for abuse of children? Why? That's not who we are. That's not how we got. And how did we get there? Well, we all know how we got there, and that's relatively short period of time. It's like, we need to stop it. We need to go back to leave some of those things that were in the past that didn't work, and use all the ones that did. And if our whole... All Māori landowners had that going on, we'd be so cool.
So back to that whenua, how big is the block?
I think it's around 45 acres.
So the permaculture plan probably takes in about 4 acres of it, and the other 5 was left for housing.
And how many uri whakapapa to that block?
Last count around 700.
Oh heck, that's
yeah,
few.
But you know, babies are born every day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting how you're saying, well, we wanted to get back on the whenua, but the first thing you thought of was not whare, but it was actually about the kai.
Yeah.
And what you would need to nourish your whanau.
Yeah, and you know, because a lot of whanau blocks are small, other than the ones like big corporations or that are doing primary industry of either forestry, farming, and now honey. So those are the big ones that are all about money, and we're more about people being back on whenua and developing communities that will benefit everybody, as opposed to just the one. Training and education and economic development, part of the Papakāinga development, hired our own whānau as workers on the project. So it also tries to keep them involved. The boys, you know, they're all in their 20s, most of them, and so they know this is their whenua, this is the skills that you get, and you're building houses for our own.
So there's a real focus on leveraging the collectivity that we have as Māori, because I think often it's forgotten that we have that as a strength.
Yeah, yeah, collective strength, and, you know, and all the reasons why we're not like that anymore. We're all well aware of, and it's like, let's get back to it. And it will be hard. The living together will be hard because we're not used to it. And it's like, where's mine? It's like, how about talking about where's ours? And what are we going to put into it to develop it? What are we going to do every day and get up and help with that garden or with that maintenance and stuff? Because this is ours, and you haven't got an individual mortgage, but we've collectively have a responsibility to keep this going.
And shifting that mindset to thinking, oh, but I'm paying rent on my own whenua, to no, we're collectively paying off our mortgage.
Yeah.
And we own all of this together.
Yeah. And whatever excess is put into economic development of businesses using the resources that we're already planting, or the rongoa, or stock, whatever, but it's like, come up with ideas of how to generate funds that are going to be our play money, because our rent's low, our power's free, the insurance are taken care of, you're living in well within your means, even if you're on a benefit. That's what we were aiming for.
So you don't need too much of that outside money?
No. So anything that, because you know, if we're growing our fruit and vegetables and meat, eggs and milk, there's not a hell of a lot else that you have to buy. And so if we can generate money out of that as well, like an income or businesses for our kids or our mokos, enough for you, it's your play money.
So we can all be free and prosperous again.
Absolutely. And we're living in communities and rural communities, because that's where all our land is, and actually making a community where it's vibrant and active again. I'm not naive to think that you can't do it without some sort of income, but we can lessen that burden by having good housing, good food, support systems in place. And you know, when you're young and you think, I can do that, it's like, yes, you can. We're all living here in a collective. What do we need to help you to make this happen? And let's do it. And you know, sort of the long-term dreams, it's like, well, if for 30 years we're managing to cover all of our costs as a papakāinga, what are we banking? And is that going to be put on, someone comes up and says, actually, we really want to go and study this and do this and this. So, sweet, we can all help you because we've got some funds now. We can go and send you off to go and develop that. Don't forget us. But, you know, if you're brought up in that kind of situation, you have a sense of belonging and a sense of responsibility to the wider whānau other than yourself. So that's where I'm looking at our mokos. It's a 20-year plan.
So it's reinstating our interdependence.
Yep.
That maybe we have lost in some ways, and yeah, focusing on our tamariki and who are coming forward, because that'll just be normal for them. And I think it's similar with te reo Māori, the ones that are growing up with it.
Yep.
You see those babies just sort of playing and scrapping, and they're all in, you know, kōrero I te reo Māori, and it's like, holy heck, you know.
Yeah. Or English, it doesn't matter, they don't care.
Yeah.
Because they're comfortable in both or any of those worlds, and so they can move forward. And that's when you stop killing their dreams. Because then it's like, I want to do this. Well, sweet, let's do it. Let's, how can we make that happen?
You just raise really, you know, culturally grounded people connected with each other. And, you know, it's all these things that are our strengths that have been eroded.
Yeah, and gives more confidence back into a lot of the rangatahi and the babies.
Awesome, amazing vision. I can
it's
see it.
It's a big dream, but it's like, it's quite simple, really, if you're back there and stuff, you know. And we, you know, everyone has things in their whānau and different people that are doing different things, but, you know, good modelling and good practice of healthy relationships is going to make it go forward. Like I say, our two-year-old mokopunas, if they're going to live in that kind of environment, by the time they're 20, it's the norm.
This is how we're going to heal our whānau.
This is the norm, and this is how we're going to heal.
As we saw today, you've used earth bag and poured earth construction, and that's not a very common construction technology. So, one, why earth?
Okay, why earth? We built our earth home in Carmel 18 years ago. And when we started researching that, it would have been 25 years ago, easy. But just the benefits of working in with Papa Tuanuku, really. They're healthy, low maintenance, and should be cheap if they're allowed to be built in a way that they have been around the world. But regulations and building codes have made it extremely difficult, and people's understanding from an engineer's and an architect's perspective, as well as council. But you know, council gets it after architects and engineers have been at it. So if we don't have people skilled enough in that area, in my opinion, and that needs more upskilling, because everyone tries to make it fit in their box of concrete, wood and steel that they're used to dealing with, and earth doesn't work that way. And so that knowledge has, the implications of that have meant that we've spent huge amounts of money to get them to understand that this will still be solid, it'll still work, it'll still be safe, waterproofing. And you know, we were hindered too with the earthquakes in Christchurch and the leaky home building. So that's the big push all the engineers go as, what about the seismic properties? How's that going to work? It's, you know, because they're so heavy, if we have an earthquake, is it going to crush the people inside and all of this? I'm like, well, the research out there internationally says otherwise. And all the buildings that fell over were actually wood and tin and steel. And they cause damage too, you know. It's like, so those have been huge issues and huge cost for us.
And what do you think is the payoff? So obviously you're bearing it as a whānau for your project, but thinking more widely, through this project, what change do you think might be achieved, and how might this benefit other whānau and other Māori landowners?
Okay, so one of our major design philosophies was affordability and longevity and health. So hopefully if we can keep slogging at it and get into building code, New Zealand building code, alternatives, that it was going to be cost effective. And like what we were saying, we're trying to, get earth bag domes into New Zealand building code. They worry about the seismic stuff, they worry about waterproofing and the weight of a dome and how that would fall. Well, the Inuits have been doing, living in domes for Maidano, and you know, and a lot of the earth buildings around the world have been there for centuries, thousands some of them, you know. The Romans are still living, there's proof around the place. It's just catching up. And I find that a lot of the Europeans that come over, they have no problem because it's familiar for them. They don't see it as a risk. So our goal for future is to be able to prove all of this stuff works, hand it over to as many people as we can get it out there to, and say, here, this is a different tact, this is a different path, maybe you want to consider doing something like this, and looking at the holistic that will attack some of our social issues, some of our health issues, our housing issues, all the issues that Māori are suffering from, and putting it in as a package that, here, if you've got a small block, why not think of doing something like this?
How have you found, I guess, that process and that interaction with council, and what are your thoughts on the new plan change part B that's gone through?
When we went through it, yeah, you're the first ones to go through the new Papakāinga plan, blah, 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 and it was like, okay, that's cool. What does it actually mean? It didn't mean a hell of a lot to us at that stage, to be honest. We still had to have the tick boxes but go through, because there was a real disconnect in terms of policy and on the ground workers. And if you went to go and talk to any of the on the ground workers, they wouldn't even know if they had a Papakāinga plan in place, let alone what that meant. So we attacked it originally based on the plan, where there was the no restrictions, and
good intentions.
Yeah,
there's huge value in that for both central and local government, because a lot of these people, they're so disconnected from the reality. Often they're really well-meaning people, but they just have no idea.
Yeah,
and you really see the change in thinking when they come out to a marae, or they come out to whenua Māori, or come to a papakāinga, and they're or even come out to some of our homes that are in not very good condition and see how people are living. It's just a bit of a wake-up call.
Yeah, they have no idea people are still living in garages or sheds, or no running water or no power.
This project is significant because it's the first to be realised under Phase 1 of Whangarei District Council's Papakāinga plan change. Phase 2 has recently become operative, which means projects like this one won't need to go through the resource consent process. We spoke with Bernadette Aparahama, no Ngāti Kahu ki Whangaroa Rawa Kō Te Arawa, who is the consultant planner on the project.
Well, it was exciting for me to work on a project that I believe exceeded all outcomes articulated in the Whangarei District Plan, from my perspective anyway. It was really easy to support. The challenges, I think, in preparing a resource consent application were that the Papakāinga objectives and policies, which had been operative for 4 years at that time, and at the time nobody had used, they were awesome in terms of enabling the whānau to do what they wanted to do on their whenua and to the capacity of their whenua. What I understood to be tricky for the council planners was that there were no rules associated with those provisions. In terms of the project itself, though, I wasn't concerned whether or not it didn't was it outside of the anticipated building envelope or broke a whole lot of rules, because I felt like overall the project exceeded the outcomes for the zone, was in alignment with the objectives and policies for Papakāinga provisions, and in terms of environmental outcomes, it was going to create a positive environmental outcome, despite the project having 9 more houses than what was expected on the site. Something that was really challenging for the applicants was around the notification process. So with each resource consent, particular activity status, you have to consider whether or not you need to notify people.
Is that publicly or just the neighbours?
Oh, both. You have to do an assessment of both. It was challenging for the applicants to be thinking that they have to engage with neighbouring or even potentially the wider community who are not from there, who were operating different agricultural type activities of a far greater scale, with these huge, unattractive farming buildings, which you can do as of right, and which you can build as of right. It doesn't require them to engage with the whānau, and creating environmental outcomes that are leading to the degradation of their awa. whereas we had an application which was enabling for the repatriation of their ancestral whenua, where their ancestral kāinga was located. The development was the mātauranga of their whānau and their connection with the whenua. And yet they were the ones who would then have to go and have the conversation with the neighbours.
And ask permission, or essentially.
Yeah, and sometimes there's quite possibly a long history behind how the community were able to establish themselves around them and what advantages they had and what disadvantages the whānau had to be able to use their own land. So it was really, it was quite distressing for them to be thinking, okay, well, we just want to go home and we want to do something that's good for our people and good for our whenua, and yet we're going to have to go and have a conversation with these people who we don't know, who, you know, have absolutely no responsibility to their environment. Not necessarily unique to whangarei is that the council staff weren't particularly aware of what a papakāinga is. Within one of the first pre-lodgement meetings that I attended, and this was the third one for the project, we brought regional council and district council together, which was very, very helpful. And I'd definitely recommend doing that always. So everybody could hear what the other team group whānau were saying. And we all had the opportunity to ask questions at the same time, but our lead architect started talking about the project and I realised that there were lots of blank faces, so I just said, does anybody in here actually know what papakāinga project is? Nobody said that they did, and that's possibly because they were too shy to try and explain what they thought it was, but no one put their hand up or acknowledged that they did. Fortunately, the applicants had an amazing video saying in pictures, showing us visually what they intended to do. And that was extraordinarily helpful. But not everybody has the resources to be able to prepare a video like that.
We had the district council and the regional council in one hui, and actually Bernadette and JP, who are going to be here tonight, they helped organise that. Bernadette did say that we weren't going to the roading people and the consents people and the contributions lady, and all of that was like all on the same table, all talking about the same thing and finding out which is the way to do it.
For many Māori whānau throughout the country, building papakāinga and living on their ancestral whenua is a long-held aspiration. Aroha's whānau, despite the challenges, are actually doing it. Without dedicated community drivers, like Aroha, these projects simply don't happen. There is much mahi to do, but together we can achieve it. As the whakatauki goes, nā tauroro, nā ku te roro, ka ora ai te iwi. On that note, I'll leave the final word to Aroha.
That's right. It's like, what if our whole valley, and this is what we've dreamt of as while we're developing stuff, it's like, right, my whole Mangakahia Valley. What if all the Māori land that is still owned under multiply owned land ownership that's being leased to farmers to do milking or whatever they do, what if we took all that back and it was all grown in permaculture gardens? Therefore, none of our valley would be hungry and they would have all of that stuff. What if we had all of these houses in here and we all lived collectively back as hapū or whānau units and hapū along our road? We would be so rich in every way. So dream big. we do dream big. Dream big. Get us really set vision on what that dream is and then try to work towards it.
You can find out more about the Papakāinga project and follow along for updates on the project Facebook page at facebook.com/ukudevelopers. Indigenous Urbanism Aotearoa Edition is a production of Te Matapihi. Sandy Wakefield does our sound recording, editing and mixing. Our theme was composed by Thomas Burton. I'm Jade Kake, your host and executive producer. For more information about today's show and other episodes of Indigenous Urbanism, go to indigenousurbanism.net. You can drop us a line at info@indigenousurbanism.net. And if you like what you're hearing, please give us a review or rating on iTunes. Coming up next on Indigenous Urbanism, we visit Mihi Te Rore at her whare on ancestral Māori land in Kaihu, located in the Kaipara district of Te Tai Tukiro.
And here, as we walked to the kitchen, there were, I had a couple of jacks, two jacks underneath the house here because that was a bit unstable, so the fridge would wobble and the stove would wobble.
Things haven't always been easy for Mihi and her whānau, but thanks to the housing repairs program, delivered by her iwi to Uriaho, and funded by Te Puni Kōkiri, the Ministry of Māori Development, she now has a warm, dry and safe whare for her whānau to call home.
Seeing what he's given to me and my family, we're confident now, we feel confident. It's hard when you're in a house that's falling down around you.
I know, how can you live?
And you come home to an ancestral land that you've been, your tūpuna have been, it's like nobody cares.